Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today is someone who's been on once before, but who, really, whose spirit is in every episode of Random Trek, because he is the man without which there would be no episodes of Random Trek. It's Jim Metzendorf. Jim, thank you for joining me again.
Scott, thank you for allowing me to invite myself back onto the show and you graciously accepting my invitation to myself.
Yes, as Jim and I were talking before the show, and I told him that my favorite kinds of guests for Random Trek are the kinds of guests who have been on before and who reach out and say, hey, you should have me on again, which Jim did recently. And I said, you're totally right. Let's have you on. And Jim is back. And Jim, for people who are listening, edits almost every single episode of Random Trek. I think he probably has not edited, I would think, maybe two or three of the episodes, the 180-odd episodes that we have. So everyone either owes him a gratitude or should curse his name, because he's the reason why you're hearing me in your ears right now. And I'm always impressed that you listen to this so much, and yet you still want to talk to me.
Yeah, of course. Well, there's two things at play here, Scott. You know, first and foremost, I will say that I enjoy Random Trek, and that's the number one reason why I wanted to be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
The number two reason is you've been a little thin on episodes lately, and
true.
I don't get paid unless you record an episode, so it's a little self-serving. But that's a distant second reason. Let me make that very clear.
Of course. It's a very Quark would be proud of that reason, I think.
Oh, I would think so.
Yeah, so people on the internet, well, I say people, but like one or two people have tweeted at me concerned that I have given up on Random Trek. I have not, as you're listening to this episode, is proof that I have not. I have just been busy with other things in life, so I apologize. But we're back, and I'm excited to talk about Star Trek. But before we jump in, Jim, is there anything you want to tell the people about yourself before we talk about Star Trek?
Sure. Let's see. Well, my primary function on this planet is that of an audio and video editor, primarily podcasts. I edit shows not only for the Incomparable Network, specifically Random Trek, but on occasion, one of your other shows, Total Party Kill.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Simpsons quote draft episode of the Incomparable recently that I pinch hit for Jason on. But I also edit a number of shows for the Relay FM network. Let's see. Literally all the shows from Mobile Nation. So that's like iMore.com. Our mutual friend Micah writes for iMore and is one of the hosts of the iMore show. And also things like Android Central Podcast, Windows Central Podcast, Rene Ritchie's show Vector.
Did you ever think that there would be a world where you would make your living editing podcasts?
Well, until I got laid off from my last job, no. No, you know what? It's interesting because I started working for a radio station in college. That was like my college job. Mm-hmm. And I really loved audio production. It was something that I was around and involved with ever since I was little. My dad volunteered as the recording engineer for one of the regional symphonies where I grew up. So I can remember going to concerts with him when I was like 10, 12 years old, you know, kind of seeing the ropes of things. And I've been full time doing this as my gig for about a year and a half now.
What a world we live in.
That's right.
And I did attempt the first episode of Random Trek. I edited myself, and it was horrific to do. So I thank you for all of your help, because
you bet.
I couldn't do it. And the reason is, I think that as some people, some helpful people on iTunes point out, I say and do normal things like that. And when you're listening and editing it yourself, you are very you can give in to the temptation to edit out every single or pause to tighten it up, which, you know, some people would appreciate. But I do feel like, well, A, it takes a super long time, and B, I think it sounds kind of weird.
I agree. Yeah, that's one thing that I've in all seriousness, have kind of felt that, you know, if I have a client that wants all the ums and uhs removed, then that's what I'll do. But one of the things that I really like about podcasts is that they're different from the perfect speech that has kind of come from broadcast television and broadcast radio. And so I don't think it's necessary always to remove that.
I agree, obviously, because I don't want it removed from the show. And I do tip my hat to the people who can talk without using ums and ahs, because it is a skill that I do not possess. And it is more
nor
difficult.
Nor do I.
It is more difficult than you think it is, people listening at home. So let's talk about Star Trek. Discovery. Yay. Have you watched Star Trek Discovery?
Oh, yes.
What are your thoughts? Do you like it?
Oh, what a terrific season of TV. As you know, far as I'm concerned, it's got to be just about the best single season of any television show that I've ever seen. I really loved it from start to finish. It did get even better as the season went along. There were maybe a few episodes that were not quite as strong as the others, but overall, I thought it was fantastic. There was a lot there for people who are longtime Trek fans, but I also thought it was really accessible for people who weren't already familiar with Star Trek, or at least not deeply familiar with it. And, you know, as an example of that, my wife Jana, who had seen the JJ Kelvinverse movies and liked those well enough, and had seen a couple of the original series cast movies, watched Discovery with me. That was like our weekly Sunday night ritual together, and she really, really enjoyed it, which I was happy about. Now, the one thing I'll say as a teaser to the episode that we're going to talk about is that she did sit down and watch this episode with me.
Oh,
she had never seen Deep Space Nine before. I do believe that there is a part of her that still loves me. I think, however, it may be buried far, far, far deeper down than it previously was.
Oh, man. Well, this is an excellent segue. See, you're a pro, Jim. This is an excellent segue for me to tell people what episode we're about to talk about, which you already know because you've seen the title of this podcast that you're listening to, which is from Deep Space Nine, Season 5, Episode 19, Ties of Blood and Water. And here's a fun tip. It's not a fun tip, a fun fact about Random Trek. The episode that is directly precedes this episode covers the episode of Deep Space Nine that comes directly after this episode of Deep Space Nine. So, hey, the random generator is a fickle thing. Who knows?
Yes.
That episode, Ferengi Love Songs, I think is the name of it, is a very light episode. Ties of Blood and Water, not so light.
Not light at all.
That is
not light at
no,
all.
No, and it is. I will say, as I was watching this, I totally get where Jenna is coming from. Because as I was watching this, I will say, spoiler alert, I think this is an excellent episode of Deep Space Nine, and I think Jim and I may have a different opinion of that. So this will be an interesting conversation. But I think it worked so well for me. Well, there are a couple reasons, and I'll get into them. But as I was watching it, I thought this is so effective because of the kind of the unique strength that Star Trek has as being an episodic TV show. And this is, we're five seasons in, we're deep into the fifth season. We spent so long with these characters that we know them so well that I think the things that happen in this episode, which is not a very exciting episode, nothing, you know, blows up or anything like that. It's a kind of quiet, somber episode. And I think it works well because of Kira and our relationship with Kira as viewers, at least as far as I'm concerned. But it sounds like, Jim, that perhaps you had a very different experience with this episode.
You know, actually, since you put it that way, I completely agree with you from that standpoint. For me, as a huge Trek fan, it's completely, I don't know, what's the opposite of standalone episode, whatever the opposite of that would be. Mm-hmm. That doesn't bother me, because Deep Space Nine particularly was a Trek series that, what was it? The fourth season was the start of the Dominion War.
I think so.
I think, yeah. From there on out. Yeah. Yeah. From there on out, it was really a big, long journey.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the strengths that I'll say about it too, is I think this and, last week's Random Trek episode about Ferengi love songs are perfect examples of something I really admire about Star Trek and enjoy about Star Trek, which is within the Star Trek universe, their ability to tell totally different kinds of stories, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that episode was more or less, you know, a comedy.
Yep.
This is a really quiet, thinky-think episode mm-hmm. that really deals with Kira's regret mm-hmm. and dealing with themes of forgiveness. And then you have other episodes of Deep Space Nine and other, you know, forms of Star Trek too, where they'll have straight up action episodes or more espionage. You know, there are all sorts of different things. And that's one aspect that I always liked about Next Gen, was you'd get on the holodeck and then all of a sudden, okay, yeah, it's Star Trek, but now it's also a Sherlock Holmes mystery, or now it's a Western. Having said all of that, I can see why my wife Jana mm-hmm. was not too thrilled with this episode.
Yes, I can, and that's the trick with Deep Space Nine, and I think with Star Trek Discovery as well, is if you just see one of the episodes, especially Deep Space Nine later seasons, they are assuming that you have gone on this journey that I waxed philosophical about a couple of seconds ago, minutes ago, about, you know, all the seasons and, you know, these characters so well. If you don't have that, this is just kind of a boring episode about people you don't care about and some dude dying.
Right.
Which I totally get. And also, this has the added layer, for me at least. So this episode deals with, what's his name? I can't even remember his name. I'm bad with names. People get angry.
It's
Gamor, right?
T'Keni Gamor.
T'Keni yeah. Gamor, which is such a great name. Also, FYI, that's yeah. a great name. T'Keni Gamor, who previously has been on Deep Space Nine, I think maybe a season two episode, which we talked about on Random Trek with somebody, I think, in which Kira is kidnapped by Cardassians, and they explain this in the first, 30 seconds of this episode, so you kind of, for people who didn't see that episode, will kind of know why Kira cares about this random old Klingon dude. Not Klingon, Cardassian. So they kidnap Kira, they perform some facial plastic surgery on her to make her look like a Cardassian, and tell her, hey, guess what? You're not actually a Bajoran, you are a Cardassian spy who we had altered to infiltrate the Bajoran resistance, and this gull or legate is your father, and he's very excited to have her back and all of this stuff. And it's a really good episode. And it turns out the Cardassians were lying all along, and she was a Bajoran and unrelated, but the Legate was one of the rare good Cardassians. So he agreed to escape with her and, you know, fight against the Cardassian Dominion Alliance, which came much later. So that's the backstory you need if you don't have this. And watch that episode if you like. So he's dying. Spoiler alerts for this episode. The Gamor is dying. He has a terminal illness. He's got Yharnam-Fell syndrome, which doesn't sound good. And so he's dying. And the thing that, for me at least, my mother had cancer, and I was her primary caregiver for the last, you know, 2 years of her life. And so the scenes where Kira is with Gamor and he's on his deathbed, basically, and they're fiddling with all the machinery. And, you know, there's the scene where she's angry at him and he's tangled himself up in some tubes and she gets upset. And then you can tell that she feels bad about herself because he's dying, but she's also upset about some other information she found out. It just all rang true to me because of that situation. My mother was not a Cardassian, but the situation was very, they got the feeling of that situation correct. Yeah. And so on that level, yeah, it really worked for me as well. So that explains why I liked it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. My mom has passed also, and she was pretty sick the last 6 months of her life. And you know, I can remember, you know, those moments of the frustration with this person you love and care about, too, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, just the whole situation. And, you know, I think the other aspect of that, too, you know, not to make this, you know, completely dark episode of Random Trek, where
it's a pretty dark episode.
Yeah, where Jim and Scott talk about the deaths of their parents. You know, I can remember when she died in the hospital. Mm-hmm. I just I wanted to bolt out of that room as fast as I could and just, I don't know what, drive and drive and drive or walk and walk and walk. I just, you know, at the moment, I just didn't want to deal with it or handle it. And that's really where the power of this episode comes into play with Kira and the flashback she has about her dad being injured. Mm-hmm. And then she goes to do the terrorist strike, even though she doesn't have to, kind of knowing that, you know, he's probably going to die while she's gone because she doesn't want to deal with it. And then she has this second chance with somebody she cares about and has to make that decision.
I'm going
to
take us further down the path of Jim and Scott talk about their parents dying, because the that scene in particular where Kira is, so her, as Jim said, her father gets injured, it's clear he's going to die, and Kira is like, well, I need to get revenge and kill these Cardassians that did this to him, and he basically says, no, you don't have to go, and she says, well, I've got to go, I'll be back, Dad, and she goes off and she comes back and he's dead. My mom had you know, at the end of her life, she deteriorated very quickly, and so we you know, it became clear she chose to do hospice at home. Hospice, for those people who don't know, is if you have a terminal illness, they can generally, Western medicine wants to do as much as they can to prolong your life as much as you can. But you have to, at that moment, think about the pros and cons between quality of life versus length of life, right? And so my mom did all of this. She decided that she didn't want, you know, more drugs and stuff. So she decided to go into hospice, which is basically they make you comfortable, but they don't do anything to prolong your life, right? So she was doing that at home. She was very happy. Well, as happy as one can be in such a situation. And then it became clear that she was deteriorating. And so we put her into inpatient hospice, got her checked in and she was all set there, and I was like, all right, I'm going to stay the night, Mom, and I'll be with you. And she said, no, I want you to go home. You won't be comfortable in the hospice room. Just go home. So I was like, well, you can't really argue with your dying mother. So I went home. Luckily, the hospice was 3 blocks from my house. So the next morning, I think people can tell where this is going. The next morning, I got a call from the hospice that said, you know, your mother is not responsive. You should get here as quickly as you can. So I got there as quickly as I can. I'm pretty sure that she had passed away before they called me, because by the time I got there, she was no longer with us. So it's an echo of what Kira, like, I didn't choose to leave. My mom told me to leave, but I was kind of like, at that moment, I still feel a little guilty about not being there for the moment. And I know it is not rational. There was nothing I could do about it. But so that's another thing about this episode that spoke very directly to me. Hopefully, I mean, this is getting very, very somber, Jim. I don't know.
It is. But that's okay. I think it's cathartic in a way. And, hopefully enough time has passed for both of us that, you know, we can kind of look at this with a little more perspective than it was happening in the moment.
Yes, it's hard. In the moment, these are overwhelming things that we all have to deal with at some point or another. So, and I don't know what strategies people use other than, if anyone who's listening to this is dealing with this currently in their life, just make sure to take time for yourself and to do some self-care, because it's very easy. Your impulse is to, you know, the person who is going through this big illness or injury or whatever needs all the help that you can give them. So your impulse is just to give and give and give. But then you kind of crash and burn. So just make sure to take some time for some self-care. That's my advice to you. And now I promise.
Good advice.
Well, thank you. We should talk about this episode of Star Trek.
All right.
But I will say that this episode has some lighter moments. It is generally about Kira struggling with her guilt for her father's death, and then kind of reconciling it with, kind of adoptive father. Gamor has really adopted Kira more than I think Kira has adopted him, but they like each other. And then, of course, Kira has this whole thing where she was a surrogate, basically, for Miles and Yoshi is the name of the kid. Why can't I think of Miles' wife's name? This is Keiko. Keiko Oprah.
It's there you go. Keiko, yes. I almost said Molly, but no. That's not.
Yes. Yeah. So Kira has a very interesting family unit going on. And so that's an interesting aspect of it. And then also in this episode, we've got Gul Dukat, of course, and Wayoon, I feel like, brings the most levity to the situation just because he's Wayoon and he does weird things. And Jeffrey Combs, who plays Wayoon, you can tell that he is gleeful in this character. And this is, I think, maybe Wayoon's second appearance on Deep Space Nine. So he's very fun.
I really like that scene where he and Gul Dukat show up on Deep Space Nine, and Captain Sisko's like, I saw you die. And then he goes on to explain, well, yes, I'm actually the fifth Wayoon, and, you know, our species is really good at cloning and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, certainly Jeffrey Combs is a fabulous character actor. Mm-hmm. He was always great in Deep Space Nine, and I enjoyed his character in Enterprise as well, Shran.
Yes, the Andorian.
He was a good Andorian. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in that scene where he's talking about cloning is a perfect example of how great the character of Wayoon is, because he's talking about kind of, he's got like this kind of almost airy, kind of nonchalant, kind of maybe giddy way of explaining that they're experts in cloning. And Captain Sisko says, oh, immortality. And Wayoon says, in a way, are you interested? And like gets very serious and businesslike because he feels like, oh, maybe this is a possible leverage point that we can use to get Cisco to agree to our terms. Because Wei Yun is always looking at ways to get the best deal for the Dominion. If that means tricking someone, you know, taking over their planets, killing everybody, or drinking some poisoned alcohol. He's up for any of it.
Yeah, that was a good bit too, when he drinks the poison. What was it? A bottle of
Kanar.
Kanar, yeah, yes. The Cardassian wine or alcohol of some type. But yeah, that was a lot of fun, and I have to say too, related to those scenes with Wei Yun and Gul Dukat, I really enjoyed how strongly Captain Sisko stands up to Dukat in that first communication where Dukat contacts Sisko and says, hey, you know, I heard there's this guy on your station and we sure would like him to come home. And Sisko's having none of it. He's just like, yeah, if he is here, too bad.
Yes.
Hangs up the phone.
He says, like, I wouldn't hold my breath or something like that, and hangs up the phone when right. Gul Dukat's like, we want him back and give him a hero's welcome. And that's it. I mean, Gul Dukat, I've talked about my love of Gul Dukat just because he's such an evil character and so charismatic. But it is clear he wants this. He wants Gamor back because Gamor knows a lot about Gul Dukat and probably knows something that Gul Dukat doesn't want anyone else to know. So Gul Dukat wants him back so that he can kill him. But he couches it in such a way that it's like, no, I want to welcome him home. He's a hero. The Cardassian High Tribunal has cleared him of all his crimes. We just want him to come home and be under the sun of Cardassia and get all the honors that he deserves. Which, you know, is a complete lie. But he says it in such a charming way that you think, well, maybe he's being truthful. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting too how the Cardassians are, they're really played in the series on their propaganda angle.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end of this episode, Dukat and Shran talk about how, well, you know, even though Gamor is dead, the good news is that he confessed to his crimes, you know, just before the end of his life, and you know, he is a hero, and you know, all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Sisko's like, well, just one problem, one small problem. He didn't do that. And Shran said, or not Shran, Wei Yun says, "Yeah, that's a small problem.
Yeah, just a small detail. We can work with
yeah.
that."
Yeah.
And there is that also comes up when Gul Dukat meets with Gamor, because basically he's like, "Well, let's." Sisko says, "Absolutely not." And Gul Dukat's like, "Well, really, we should ask Gamor." And so they go and ask Gamor, and Gamor's like, "I hate you. I'm not doing anything, even though this offer is tempting." And Wei Yun is like, "We really need to work on your image, Dukat."
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, kind of a sidebar to this, and something that I wanted to talk with you about tonight, or at whatever non-specific time we recorded this,
mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to break the illusions here.
That's right.
Is kind of how you perceive the differences between the big villain races in Star Trek, like the Cardassians versus Romulans, especially, you know, I was thinking about this watching the episode and, you know, they definitely have a lot of similarities. You know, they have like the Romulans have, the Tal Shiar, and the Cardassians have the Obsidian Order, which if you wanted to draw analogies to, our society would be, you know, like the Russian KGB or, mm-hmm. you know, the CIA or whatever, here in the United States. But what, how do you feel, the Cardassians are really differentiated from some of the other bad guy races?
That is an interesting question. And I mean, even if you take the Romulans and the Cardassians, looking at their kind of their uniforms and their physical presence, they're very similar, right? Because the Romulans have those silly padded shoulder things, but it makes them look a little more imposing. And the Cardassians have very kind of, I don't even know how to describe them. They're all wearing military outfits and they just look, they're bulky people. But less so than Klingons, right? Klingons are joyful warriors. You feel like they're full of honor. And in, of course, Deep Space Nine, they're not our enemy or our enemy. Like, I'm in the Federation. They're not the Federation's enemy.
You are, Scott.
I'm an honorary Federation member. But I think the Cardassians are... so the Romulans are... I feel like they've got cloaking devices. They're all about subterfuge and strength through knowledge, like they know everything and they always have a secret plan and they're always watching. And the Cardassians have a similar thing, but I feel like they ramp up the ruthlessness and just kind of the brute strength is their turn of how they deal with it. And of course they are, I mean, the two great Cardassian characters on Deep Space Nine are Garak and Gul Dukat. And both of them, well, Gul Dukat is delusional. And Garak, you never know when he's telling the truth or not. You just assume he's not ever telling the truth. And so it's just, I feel like the Romulans, people know I'm a fan of Romulans. But they were never really given the depth that other alien races on Star Trek have gotten. Romulans have just been kind of like, you know, they're vaguely Roman. They've got cloaking devices. They hate all other species. They don't want to mix with anybody. They stay in their star empire and we leave them alone. Every once in a while, they show up with their cool ships and then we leave. We don't, you know, talk about them ever again. The Cardassians are more interested in being an active part of the quadrant, right? And I think they are more the thing. As I'm talking about this, I think perhaps the big difference between the Romulans and the Cardassians are the Cardassians have much more naked ambition. Like they want to actively expand. They are looking, and they don't hide it, right? I think the Romulans.
Yeah.
Also want to do it, but they do it in a little surreptitious ways. The Cardassians don't have any time to hide that part. The way they do it, though, is full of subterfuge, and they'll do all kinds of sneaky things. But it is clear they want what you have, and they're going to get it.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. I think you really hit the nail on the head with that. I hadn't quite thought of it in those terms, but now that you say it, I think that makes totally sense. The Romulans are kind of the... Make Romulus great again crowd. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe the Cardassians are a little bit more of the British colonialists. I don't know.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe that's, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah, I think
I think that makes sense.
Romulans are isolationists and Cardassians are expansionists. So there you go.
Yes.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
And they're both very strong. So they do have a lot of similarities. I've never really given it too much thought about how similar Romulans and Cardassians are. But they are quite similar. Which I guess explains why I like Cardassians so much as well.
Yeah.
Who knows? They appeal to me. These warrior races appeal to me. I'm sure it means something. One thing I did want to talk about. Oh, what does it mean? Tell me, Jim.
Oh, I was just going to say, it means that you're a lover, not a fighter, because, you know, just like I know, obviously, you're a big role-playing game mm-hmm. fan. And, you know, sometimes we tend to be attracted to these opposite types when it comes to our, you know, entertainment or what have you. So,
that's true.
It's a good way to, you know... be a good guy and live vicariously through the bad guys by rooting for the Cardassians.
That's right. We want them to win, although I don't really want them to win, but I'm always rooting a little bit for Gul Dukat, even though I feel bad about it. It's kind of like when you watch Dexter. You kind of root for him,
right,
but then you realize, wait a second, he's a serial killer, but he's killing bad people, but he's still a serial killer. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I was just thinking, like, you know, Garrick is like the most lovable pathological liar, or is he, you know, that's out there. But, you know, then you have somebody like Dexter, who is literally a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And you know, Garrick has killed a lot of people, too. So, but he also will hem your pants. So,
yeah,
it's useful.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing I want to talk about, because this episode does play a little bit of a trick on you, because if you're familiar with Cardassians and the occupation of Bajor and all of that stuff, you know that it's unusual for Kira to even vaguely like a Cardassian because of her history. And then they weave the flashbacks, which are very effective, of her talking to her father, and it's clear that her father has been injured in some sort of Cardassian attack. And so you, or at least I think they were leading us down the path to think that Gamor was directly responsible for her father's death, which is not the case. But they wanted you to think that for a while. Or was that just me?
Yeah. No, not just you. I think that was a good feint on the, mm-hmm. on the writer's part for this episode. And I think, you know, this episode also just has those perfect examples of, I know on last week's episode, you mentioned the casual racism.
That's true.
Of Star Trek. And, we see that in this episode where, isn't it Worf says to, mm-hmm. to Dax, or Dax says to Worf in the teaser for the episode, something to the effect of, boy, can you believe that Major Kira is actually friends with a Cardassian? And, you know, when you see stuff like that in Star Trek or other shows, on one hand, you kind of go like, you know, God, how careless is this, or thoughtless is this writing in terms of the racism? But at the same time, it's almost brilliant in that they do hit you over the head with it, so you can see
mm-hmm.
the absurdity of it. It's kind of like shows that have you know, things that, you know, some people would say, oh, that's, you know, that's an overtly racist thing. And maybe the point of that show, or probably the point of that show, or what happens in the show, is to just throw it right out there so you can see how dumb it is.
Mm-hmm. And we were
how, you know, pointless the racism is.
And we were talking about this in a similar thing in the a book club episode of The Incomparable, which should be up by the time this is up, where we're talking about the Hugo-nominated novels. One of them is Kim Stanley Robinson's New York 2140, and he has a character in the book that is a misogynist. And some people who read the book were disturbed or annoyed by the way that this character thought of women and treated them, and kind of transferred that annoyance to the writer. But it is clear that character is a jerk, and is not painted in a good light. And so it's clear that he is using this and playing with this in the book. But the danger with doing that is that some people might ascribe those viewpoints to the writer or to the show, and then get annoyed and miss what you hope is the authorial intent of, as you said, showing this absurd thing and kind of making fun of it. But sometimes people, and then the other danger is that people who agree with those things, think of it as, you know, oh, look, this is normal and fine. And, 'cause, you know, Star Trek does it or whatever. It's tricky.
Right. They completely miss the point or the message on like so many different levels. And I have to say, Scott, you know, as a Caucasian heterosexual male American citizen, I'm glad that I could be here to be an expert, armchair expert on all things gender and racial.
Yes,
equality.
You know, we could fix it. We know what the problems are.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so complicated. So complicated.
I'd say the struggle is real, but the reality is the only thing I have going against me is I'm fat. Other than that, it's pretty much all the check marks of, you know, the privilege that comes in American society. But yeah, anyways.
Yes, we're both playing the game of life on the easy setting, I think it's safe to say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I want to know, what do you think overall of Ties of Blood and Water?
I think for somebody who's into Star Trek, familiar with Star Trek, familiar with this storyline, I think it does really well. There's one shortcoming that I kind of see compared to maybe how TV would be made today. There was something about it where the drama of it didn't have as much. The phrase I want to use is dynamic range. It was more contained.
Mm-hmm.
Than I think they would probably play out in TV today. So in that regard, I thought the show maybe seemed a little bit dated, again, compared to production values and production styles today. Yeah, as a character-driven episode, not exciting, but really enjoyable. Great, great Kira moments here. You see a lot of growth from her.
And Kira is one of my favorite characters on Deep Space Nine, so I always enjoy it because she's so. The reason I like Deep Space Nine in particular for many reasons, but I feel like it is, up until Discovery, which may take the crown, the most complex and deep, not to steal a word from the title of the show, of the Star Treks, in that characters have lots of levels here, and Kira is going through a lot, and she has a lot going on, and you know, this Cardassian is she has good reasons to hate Cardassians, but she also knows that that's kind of, you know, not the way forward. She has this unresolved thing about her father. She had this kind of frankly traumatic experience of being kidnapped and thinking her whole life was a lie and finding out it wasn't. And so, you know, all of these layers, and the writers really know how to. You know, get to that and highlight it. The problem with that, as we've discussed, is if you don't know that and you don't have that backstory and you just watch this episode, it is just boring. But I'm assuming if you are listening to Red of Trek, you probably have you're more than a casual Star Trek fan, so you will get those connections. Hopefully. And we'll enjoy this episode. But if not, that's fine. Watch Ferengi Love Songs, and you'll like that. You don't need to know anything about Star Trek to like that one. And when speaking of like, Jim, I always like having you on. I should have you on more often, so make sure to remind me in the future to invite you back on.
I would like to do that. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.